In this episode, number 3 of the All Things Local podcast, I speak with Dan Kenny, founder and executive director of the DeKalb County Community Gardens. We hear about his childhood experiences growing up in a farming family, his passion for social justice sparked by Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King in the 1960s, and how he sees access to food as a social justice issue. We learn how government, nonprofits, and individuals have come together to address issues in the Annie Glidden North neighborhood in DeKalb through community engagement. Dan challenges all of us to see people for people, not others, not them, just us. He truly believes in service to others. I know you'll enjoy this episode.
Welcome to our podcast, All Things Local, a monthly podcast about issues and ideas in our local communities from the people who research and serve them, brought to you by the School of Public and Global Affairs at Northern Illinois University. I'm your host, Dr. Alicia Shadaman, Associate Professor here at NIU. We'll hear from researchers and public service workers in government and nonprofit organizations across communities about topics and issues affecting our towns, villages, cities, and neighborhoods.
I'm Dan Kenny. I'm the founder and executive director of DeKalb County Community Gardens. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. Started 2012 officially. It really kind of got started for me before that. I was a teacher with in-school suspension students at a middle school here in DeKalb, and in talking with the students, I learned that they didn't really know where their food was coming from. So we started. I started a garden there for the in-school suspension students, and we worked with some of the other students at the school and with a local garden club, as well as got grants from the Community Foundation and the Center for, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Teaching Tolerance Grant. So those two grants allowed us to put in 3 gardens behind the middle school, and then after that, I moved to a different school and started teaching fourth grade, and we put a garden in for my classroom, and then one of the other teachers asked if I could put a garden in for her, and so we decided to expand it so that we had gardens for all the classrooms at Brooks Elementary School in DeKalb. I had in my classroom that year a student whose father was running for the school board, and he asked me about putting in gardens at the other locations at the other schools in DeKalb School District. At the same time, during the time I had the garden at Clinton Rosette, I also took vegetables to the food pantry that first summer that we put the garden in, and I started to learn about the need for fresh vegetables at food pantries. So in the back of my mind, as I put in the classroom garden and so on, I was thinking about the need for increased access to fresh food. And it seemed very ironic for me that in DeKalb County, where we have the best soil in the world, we have people who are going to bed hungry at night, especially children who are going to bed hungry. 20% of our children are food insecure in DeKalb County. I decided to contact a master gardener from the University of Illinois Extension who was doing community gardens in Rockford. And so I asked him to come down and do a public presentation on community gardens in 2012. And so we started the DeKalb County Community Gardens then in March of 2012.
So in terms of your upbringing, did you always have this passion for gardening? Is that in your past? Do you come from this long line of an agricultural family, or you came to it later?
No, I do come from a long line of agricultural family. I have my father was born in 1908, and he was born onto a farm and farmed with horses and continued to farm throughout his lifetime up until I was about 10 years old, and then we had to give up our farm because at that time agriculture was going through a big change. And so one of the things that's often quoted about the late 60s is that the Secretary of Agriculture said to farmers, you have to get big or you have to get out. And my father never owned land. We always rented land. He had to get out of farming because he was working nights as a night watchman to earn enough money to farm by daytime. We sold our farm, equipment, and gave up the rental of the property and moved into town. So then I put in a garden. Well, we always had gardens when I was growing up, but also I put in a garden. And when I was in college one summer, I decided I would garden instead of work, and that was very disconcerting to my father. But anyway, so I gardened at one summer on my summer break. But I really got involved with this not because I was a wonderful gardener or because I loved gardening so much. It was because of my social justice concerns and the concern for hunger and poverty. I came to that early in my life as well. When I was in junior college and high school, I started to become more aware of what was going on in our country in terms of poverty. Reading The Other America by Michael Harrington when it first came out, following the work of Robert Kennedy and others, Martin Luther King, the Poor People's March, all of those things kind of came at a time when I was kind of shaping my identity and what I cared about as a person, and that affected my decision to start the community gardens more than my love for gardening.
So you really see the fight for food as a social justice issue?
Yes. Food equity, yes.
And how do you define that? Because I think when we talk about food insecurity or food deserts or those kinds of things, those are terms, but I don't know if everybody has that kind of common understanding of what that means.
Well, I often say that in our country we have two different food systems. We have a food system that's for individuals who can afford to go to a grocery store that's open 24/7 with many different varieties of spaghetti or many different varieties of any type of brand of food to choose from, and you get to choose whatever you want. And then we have a food system that's set up for individuals who are food insecure, who cannot afford to go to a grocery store, and that food system provides them what's left over. And so they don't get high quality food, they don't really get choices. They only have the food pantries are usually open for 2 hours at a time, one day a week. So, and the hours are usually structured for the volunteers, and when they can get there, it's not structured for the individuals using the food pantry. So it's a much different food system, and so it's not equitable. My approach is that everyone should have a right to food and not be hungry in a country that is supposedly the wealthiest country in the world. We should be able to provide equitable access to food for everyone. The term food desert is one that's used often. The technical term food desert came from the USDA, and they define it as a location where over 50% of the population is below, a certain percentage below the poverty line, and they are over a mile from a grocery store. I kind of use the term loosely in relation to any community where there is no grocery store. So in our community, or in our county of DeKalb County, we have approximately 20,000 people that are food insecure. Many of them live in rural areas, such as small towns of 1,000 or less, where there's no grocery store other than a Casey's or a Dollar General. They have very limited selection of food in that way. The only USDA-identified food desert is our northwest neighborhood called the Annie Glidden North.
And you've been spending a lot of time in that neighborhood, and the city has spent a lot more time in that neighborhood. Can you tell us where we're at this point and what some of the plans are going forward that you're working on?
Annie Glidden North neighborhood is the northwest sector of DeKalb. It's bordered. The borders are Lincoln Highway, West Lincoln Highway, Normal Street, Bethany Road, and Huber Road, I guess. In that neighborhood, we have 25% of the entire population of the city of DeKalb lives in that neighborhood. And the majority of the residents are low income or moderate income. There's many apartment complexes in that neighborhood. And many of the buildings that were built for students, either for fraternities, sororities, apartments for students, have turned into residences for low-income families. Now, that's been a change. When the enrollment dropped, landlords then started to look elsewhere for tenants, and so many families have started to move into that neighborhood, a neighborhood that really wasn't designed to support families. We had a large issue of crime in that neighborhood, as well as other social issues. The city of DeKalb identified 30 individuals from the city to form a task force with a consulting firm called Camaros out of Chicago, and we worked with that consultant over a period of a year to come up with a revitalization plan for the neighborhood. We identified about 10 or 11 projects that we felt would help improve the quality of life for the residents of the neighborhood. That plan was adopted by the city approximately 8 months ago, and then the task force was officially dissolved, and then we have formed a new group of individuals who care about the community called the Antiglidden North Action Group, and we are starting to look at a long-term organizational structure that we can use to help with the carrying out the plans or carrying out the revitalization plan and carrying out the projects that were identified in that plan. One of the things that happened in Genoa was we were approached by an individual who said he would donate the purchase of a building and remodeling it to create a food hub in Genoa. And so we're going to have what we call the Genoa Area Community Food Hub, which will be opening in July of 2019. It's right on Main Street, and we'll have a food pantry, a commercial kitchen, as well as a classroom space, and we'll be able to provide a lot of different opportunities for the community through this food hub. And it'll allow the food pantry to be open. Right now, they're only open in Genoa once a month. So this will allow us to be open at least once a week and maybe twice a week. Also allow us to be open at different times so that it's more convenient for residents to be able to access the food pantry. We'll be able to use the commercial kitchen to teach food preparation classes, canning, preservation, different types of classes that will be beneficial for people to be able to maintain more control over their own food diets.
What's the levels, different levels of government that you work with or other nonprofits? How does that help you accomplish your mission?
So after we started in 2012, one of my goals for DeKalb County Community Gardens was to be a very collaborative approach. I mean, you know, community is at the heart of DeKalb County Community Gardens. So I wanted to work with many different entities, as many as possible, to have the greatest impact possible. I always feel that for a nonprofit to have a positive impact on its community, positive impact for the individuals it wants to serve, it really needs to work collaboratively with a lot of partners. So we work with municipalities, other nonprofits. So some ways we work with municipalities is sharing the use of land. So the city, for instance, of City of DeKalb had a vacant lot right behind their city hall. It was about one-fourth of a city block that they were just paying their crew to mow. And so we entered into a long-term agreement for use of that lot and turned it into what we call the Mayor's Community Garden. And there we have garden beds as well as perennials, and we share the produce with the local domestic violence shelter as well as a food pantry and others in the neighborhood. So that's one example. Another example is with DeKalb, Sycamore, and Genoa, all three communities, we have an agreement to provide garden space for individuals who can afford to pay $20 a year, and then they have a garden space to grow their own vegetables and do with it what they like. So those are some of the agreements we have with municipalities. With other nonprofits, we provide food for, like, Voluntary Action Center. We supplement some of their food needs with vegetables from the gardens, as well as other nonprofits in the community, to provide them access to fresh vegetables for their clients. Well, we work with all the food pantries in one way or another, usually. Our school gardens, we have school gardens now in DeKalb and Sycamore both. So the school gardens are paired up with a food pantry that's near their school or in their community that they can take excess vegetables to that don't get used by their own family members. We also take vegetables from our own gardens to the food pantries, gardens that were like the mayor's garden and so on, so that food pantries have more access to fresh vegetables.
And the Communiversity Garden here on campus, is that a partnership with DCCG?
Yes, DCCG started that garden with some students. Some students were in a class, a professor's class on community organizing. And so the students wanted to start a community garden on campus. They asked us to help them do that. So we got involved with that and helped get that garden established. And that garden provides produce for the Husky Food Pantry, which is here on campus for students of NIU.
You work with a lot of levels of government, nonprofits, the university, and if that wasn't quite enough, you now have a mobile garden, right? Can you tell us why that need was so important and how's that going?
Like I said, as I got involved in this, go back in time to 2006 when I first took garden vegetables to the food pantries and saw the need for increased access to fresh vegetables for folks depending on food pantries for their food, realized that we needed to increase Well, I'm sorry. Going back up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Ask that question.
Grow Mobile. How did that come about?
Okay. Grow Mobile. Yeah. All right. Let's see. All right. One of the things we did in 2012, shortly after we started DeKalb County Community Gardens, is we convened with Live Healthy DeKalb County, which is a, I guess it's a nonprofit that's loosely associated with the YMCA and the Northwestern Medicine. And so the Live Healthy DeKalb County group and us started a food security council. A food security council is to identify some of the issues around food security in our county and how to address those issues. So one of the issues we discovered was transportation problems with getting to the food pantries when they're open. Individuals who are trying to balance maybe one or two part-time jobs, a family, so on, it makes it difficult for them to get to the food pantry when it's open, depending on public transportation. Sometimes it would take them as many as 4 hours out of their day just to get to the food pantry and they'd have to schedule their whole day around it because practically they actually scheduled their whole week around it because they had to go during that 2 hours when the food pantry was open. As I mentioned earlier, there's also the issue of outlying areas, rural areas where there's no grocery store. And so it became apparent that we needed a mobile pantry that could go to these areas rather than expect individuals and families to try to figure out their schedule to get to the food pantry. So we entered into a partnership with Northern Illinois Food Bank, as well as the Barb Food Mart, which is a school-based food pantry here in DeKalb. And through that partnership, we are now able to access food from the food bank and use our mobile truck, 14-foot box truck refrigerated, that we can take to low-income areas and food desert areas of the county to distribute food.
So share with me what your capacity is as an organization, both your board, your staff, and then the volunteer base you need to make all of this happen.
Well, we do a lot of this with very little staff. As I said, I'm the executive director, so we have two other full-time people right now, year-round. Our associate director and program manager director up at Walnut Grove Vocational Farm, and then we also have a lead gardener and community educator. Then we all depend on a fuller part-time staff during the growing season. We have a board of directors of 11 right now, it depends. We are very dependent on an active working board. They actually perform a lot of the roles that other organizations or other companies would rely on paid employees to do, helping with outreach, helping with publicity, managing of fundraising campaigns, things like that. We don't have a development person at all. So we're dependent on our board to do all of those things.
And about how many volunteers help you to do this work, or is that something that you...
Well, we need to do a better job of tracking volunteers. But if you count all the different schools that we have gardens in and all the parents that volunteer there, as well as volunteers that we get at the farm and everything, we expect we have about 300 volunteers a year in one way or another.
And tell us about the farm and how that fits into your mission as your...
We had a public meeting about 3 years ago, and a gentleman came up to us after that public meeting, and he said that I understand DCCG would like a more permanent location, like a farm to work on. And I said, yes. And he said, well, I have a farm, but I have a specific goal for what I'd like to see that farm used for. He said, I had a son born with Down syndrome 20 years ago, and my dream was that he would be able to work on a farm and be outdoors rather than be in a sheltered workshop. That's when we started our discussion with him about using his property for a farm for teaching horticulture and agricultural skills to individuals with disabilities. So we launched what we call Walnut Grove Vocational Farm about 3 years ago. That's when we hired our program director up there. Her name is Heather Edwards. and she's a former instructor at Kishwaukee College, where she taught greenhouse management. She also grew up in a family that had greenhouses. Up there at the farm, we have two greenhouses. We have a germination room, a packing shed, an acre of vegetables, and a small orchard, as well as a 10-acre prairie that we're restoring. There, we work with students who are part of the transition programs of the high schools in DeKalb County. The produce that's raised there goes to the food pantries in Kirkland and in Genoa, also supplements the Growmobile mobile pantry. And we also run a CSA program out of there, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. So we use the packing shed to, and we use the vegetables from the garden to provide families who can afford to subscribe at the beginning of the growing season. They pay a certain amount, and then we provide them with a box of vegetables either weekly, biweekly, or monthly. They also can donate a subscription. So now we've added donating, taking boxes to families who cannot afford to subscribe, but they also have sponsors in a sense through these donated subscriptions.
So if you live in DeKalb County, the chances that you're able to connect with the community gardens is probably pretty high now.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
If you do have a need,
yeah,
reach out.
Yeah.
Likely you're either close to their community or you come to their community with the truck.
Yeah.
And you can
yeah.
get those
the truck
resources.
Has really raised our profile in the community, because people would see the gardens, but they might not know exactly who was behind the gardens or things like that. Now our Growmobile, like I said, is a 14-foot box truck, has our name on the side. We're out in the community with that truck weekly. It really helped raise our profile in the community so people knew more about us.
What are some challenges that the community gardens have come up against, and where you see some going forward you need to spend some time or there need to be some changes?
One of the challenges we have as an organization is because we're so have such a small number of full-time employees. We're really doing an awful lot with depending on volunteers. And I actually think we could have even more of an impact if we had full-time development person or someone like that to help us raise funds, somebody else to write grants besides me, things like that. So some of those challenges are internal. In terms of external challenges, there's always the challenge of being able to communicate with the public, get the word out there about what we're doing, when we're going to be where, and all that kind of stuff, in terms of keeping the public informed about what we're doing and what's available to them through us.
And I think you work probably in an area where there's still some stigma around coming and telling people, hey, I need help. My kids don't have fresh fruit and vegetables. How can I reach out? It's not mm-hmm. the same thing as some other kinds of things. It tends to be more private. So people go to food pantries and feel shame when they have to do that, but you mm-hmm. do what you need to do to feed your family. So mm-hmm. do you feel that in the community where there's still that kind of apprehension to reach out?
Yes, sometimes. I think that there's a lot of myth out there about who is actually receiving support through food pantries and food distributions. I think it's important for people to remember that 85% of the people who receive a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, are elderly, have disabilities, or children. There's not people out there taking advantage of the system, as the myth goes. And so that's one of the things we have to continually do, is educate the public about what the realities are for people who are struggling to have enough food on their table. It's not because of laziness, it's not because of lack of motivation to improve their lives or whatever. It usually has to do with either being caught up in a cycle of poverty, or has to do with the fact that they're just unable to work because they have a disability of one kind or another, or because they're elderly. We serve about 30% of the population we serve are elderly, and many people live on fixed incomes because they retired back when they were 62, and now they're 90 or 82 or 85, trying to stay in their own homes, and that's very difficult to have enough food to live on. University of Illinois did a study a few years ago and discovered that 1 in 12 senior citizens are food insecure.
So kind of thinking about that, are there stories that stick out in your mind, and not disclosing anyone's identity, but are there stories that stick out in your mind like, this is why I do this work? Like, this is the reason why the work that DCC does is so important?
Sure. There are many stories. One of the things is that people are always thanking us for what we do in the community. So that in itself shows that there's a real need. Once I was on the truck, the Growmobile, and the Growmobile has a large back door that we open, and we set out tables and we put the food out on the tables. It was about halfway through our 2 hour. We usually set up for 2 hours at a time in a location. And so we were set up, and some kids came with their mother to get some food, and then they went away from the tables. And then later, this little boy came up onto the back of the truck and actually came onto the truck where I was. And usually most people don't do that. They stay away from the back of the truck, but he came right up into the truck, and he asked if I had any more food. And I could tell that he was really hungry. It was something about his eyes that just remind me of the children that I saw when I was in Kenya. In Kenya, I was in Nairobi. I walked some of the streets near the very poverty-ridden areas of Nairobi, and some of the kids that came up to me, they had that same kind of vacant look in their eyes that this little boy had, and I just kind of realized that this was really important what we were doing, because he was really was very hungry, and he really was needing the food. And so when something like that happens, it reminds us very strongly about why we're doing what we're doing. When I see the participants out at the farm who come out there, and some of them haven't been used to being outdoors that much even, and they see how they respond to working with the plants and working with the vegetables, the pride they take when they pack the boxes for delivery to families, seeing their sense of being involved and engaged and feeling accomplished is really important. In relation to special needs individuals and those with disabilities, our state ranks 49th in the nation for providing for individuals with disabilities once they leave the public schools. I think we're providing a really important service by giving them this opportunity to feel engaged in the community, to feel like they're making a real contribution to the community and what they're doing at the farm. Story that comes to mind is when I first started the school garden at Brooks Elementary School, I put in a strawberry patch. And one time I was out picking strawberries, and I would pick one and put it in the basket and pick one and put it in my mouth. And the little girl that was doing that with me wasn't putting it in your mouth. And I said, "Don't you like strawberries?" He said, "No, not that much. They're kind of hard in the middle, and they're all white in the middle, and they don't taste very good."
Oh, she needed to try your strawberry.
That's right. I said, "Have you ever had one right off the vine?" And she said, "No." So finally she put one in her mouth, and her whole face lit up, and she said, "That's not a strawberry." I said, "Yes, that's a real strawberry."
That's not one that's been on truck for 4 weeks to get there. Yeah.
And one other story that comes to mind is the education part. We always have to do an education element to what everything we do, not only about the myths that are out there about individuals who rely on food pantries and food distributions, but also education about how to use the food. Because individuals who have not had an opportunity to cook with real food, but used food out of boxes and cans all the time, or frozen foods, don't really know how to use fresh foods. And so we were set up at a low-income neighborhood, and a woman came up to our table one day, and we had a whole variety of fresh vegetables from our gardens, as well as some apples we had gotten from a local orchard. She picked up a tomato, and she said, "Is this a tomato or an apple?" She said, "I know they're both red." And she was a mother of a child, and she had never really had that opportunity to be exposed to fresh produce enough to even recognize one type of produce from another. So there's always a big educational component as well. Yeah, when I was teaching, I had a little boy that would go to the bathroom at the same time every day. And finally, I was trying to figure out why he was doing that. And I watched, and he came back into the classroom, and he went to his locker before he would go sit down. So I investigated a little bit further and found out that he was taking boxes of cereal from the kitchen across from my classroom. And so I talked to him about it. Then I called his mother, and she said, "Well, I have to keep my cupboard doors locked. Otherwise, he would eat between meals, and I can't afford to have him eat between meals because I'll run out of food before the end of the month." So that kind of helped me realize that the need that was in our community in that way.
How can people help? How can they get involved? What can they do on a personal level, and what can they do maybe through some organizations that are working in the community?
Well, on the personal level, I guess learn as much as you can about the facts of the situation of hunger in our community and in our country, and then share that with people that you know. That's one thing. Another thing is to try to volunteer if you're able to once in a while for a food pantry or some other type of organization that's involved in that, because it helps you see that we are actually working with individuals. It's not a low-income community. It's individuals. They're all families. They're all individual people with their own dreams and their own histories. And once you get to that point where you don't see them as them, but you see them as part of us, and that they're just individuals just like us, and they had different circumstances that brought them to that point. But I think that's a huge thing. If we can get past thinking about us and them, and that it's just us, you know, that would be one thing. Another thing is, of course, with our organization and any other organization, they can go to websites and find ways to volunteer. Well, on our DeKalb County Community Gardens website is DeKalbGardens.org, and we have a volunteer button. We can click onto that and fill out the information, and then someone will get back to them to get them involved.
What advice, or do you have any advice that you would tell your 25-year-old self? Are you doing the work you thought you'd be doing? probably not exactly what you thought, but sounds like you had that always in the back of your mind a little bit.
I feel kind of shy about saying this, but when I was young and I was in college, I graduated from Northern in 1977. When I started my college career in 1971, I decided to go into education because I wanted to change the world, and I thought that was one way you could do that. I don't think about changing the world anymore, but I feel that I guess the important thing to me is that I learned very early in life that it's more important to be of service to others than to only think about yourself. And so I would tell my 25-year-old self not to be so shy and start to engage with people more and start engage with people and building relationships with a wide variety of people.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of All Things Local, a monthly podcast brought to you from the School of Public and Global Affairs at Northern Illinois University. I'm Dr. Alicia Shadiman. Join me next time to discuss issues and ideas facing our local communities. To learn more about our faculty and programs here at NIU, go to niu.edu/spga.